Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rosendahl. Thanks for downloading another episode of the Corner Office Podcast. This one is a special bonus episode with a guy who's not a CEO anymore, but for a lot of years was one of the most powerful people in Hollywood. His name is Michael Ovitz. Creative artist agency, talent agency that he co-founded and ran for 20 years, represents Hollywood A-listers like Meryl Streep, George Clooney, and Tom Hanks. Michael Ovitz came into the studio to talk about his new book the other day. It's on his life and his life in the business. It's called Who is Michael Ovitz?
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Michael Ovitz, thanks for coming to the studio.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So the title of this book, Who is Michael Ovitz? And I'm going to paraphrase you, except in radio-friendly language. in a big part of this book, you come off as kind of a jerk.
Well, I was pretty honest about what occurred and what was some of the good things that we did, some of the bad things. Look, when you're in a service business, you're in a place where you can't please everybody all the time. If you have a fantastic project and you give it to one studio, you're going to have a dozen others really upset with you. Mm. We weren't in a place where you could win a popularity contest. You're there to please your specific client and to get their dreams made. And there's fallout along the way.
I jumped ahead a little bit. I want to back up and talk about how you got to be where you are. You started as a kid doing tours at the studios over on the West Side.
I got the bug when I was over at the Universal lot.
What was the bug? What caught you?
I think being over there with all these creative people and watching them take ideas and turn it into something you could read, see, or hear was pretty extraordinary to me. And to this day, I'm still captivated by that ability for people to come up with concepts and then realize them into things that are entertaining or provocative or educational.
And your role in that equation as the agent and the deal maker was what?
We were the facilitators, and we came up with this concept of putting creative people together. So if you personally had an idea, we wouldn't let you just sell the idea outright and lose all of your leverage. If you had an idea, gave it to us, and we thought we could put it together, we would put you with other creative people to enhance it and then try to create something that gave all the creative people much more leverage against the buyer.
Which is the innovation and the disruption that CAA brought to this industry, right? You got a writer and an actor and a director and a producer. You packaged them and you got them to the studio. And you had the whole enchilada.
The whole concept was to not let creative people sell their wares individually and to hold on to as much rights as we could for their ideas. The thing about the entertainment business that is difficult is that the combination of personalities creates a high likelihood of conflict. It's concentrated with a lot of really talented human beings, and everybody wants to get their way and get it done the way they want to.
And it's all a version of a power play, right? Who's got the influence? Who's got the ability to get the deal done, the picture made?
Power is critical, and it's one of the things we tried really hard to maintain.
And arguably, you shifted the balance from the studios, the buyers of the product, to, with this packaging thing you guys came up with, to the creators.
Well, the whole concept was to shift the balance of power from the buyer to the seller. And the clients needed that leverage, not just for financial reasons, but for creative reasons. You know, the biggest fights in the entertainment business are creative fights. Mm. A studio wants one ending. The director or actor or writer want another ending. We felt that the creative people were always right. And we felt that they needed to be backed. And we felt that they needed to have the support of an organization behind them, which they hadn't had for a long time.
Could you have been as successful as you were without the, and I think this is your word, obsessiveness, right? You were detail-oriented and mission-driven, which led to, as you say in the book, if your funeral was held today, 25,000 people would show up to make sure you were really dead, you know? Could you have been Michael Ovitz without that drive?
I don't think so. In that time frame, in a really flush economy with the amount of options available, we had to set a stage that we were all-knowing and had the ability to execute and could deliver almost anything. And we couldn't look weak. We couldn't look vulnerable, couldn't allow to have any chain, any link in the chain look weak. When you're done with all that and you look back and you're a little older, you wonder if you could have done it a little differently. Could we have done it a little differently? Probably, with a little less of the aggressiveness. But I don't think we would have built the company in the period of time that we did without that push.
Talk to me about Hollywood today and first of all, the balance of power. Has it shifted back to the studios and to the outlets with so many outlets for content now? I mean, look at television, for crying out loud.
Well, I think that the business is completely different than the business I was in. I don't recognize the business today compared to what I was in. We were in a business that had a flush economy. You could build movie stars. You could build careers. There were people going to theaters. There was a movie star system and a television star system. Today, you've got entire viewer patterns that are being disrupted totally. This whole concept of watching a television show like one used to from the inception of television up through the early 2000s, where you'd watch a television show at a time and a date, and that's when you got to see it. It's completely different viewing patterns.
When you see Netflix spending, I don't even know what the number is, $8 billion, $10 billion on content in a year, does that make your head spin when you think back to the day?
Not really, because if you look back, we had that collectively. It just wasn't as focused or centered as it is right now. They have no choice but to do that because they're going to be hard-pressed to get original content from the people they're driving out of business. So they have to spend money on original content. They're doing a really good job.
A word here about money. There's a lot of it in this book. You call it a scorecard for success. Does it have to be that way?
It doesn't have to be. Everybody has their own definition of what they want and how they want to run their life and comport themselves accordingly. I have a lot of friends where money is completely irrelevant to them. There are a lot of people that do extraordinary things in life where money is a secondary issue. When you grew up the way I did, money became a scorecard. And when you want to, shall we say, get out of the valley, money is a pathway to be able to put you in a position to try to make the kind of social change or business change that you'd like to make. It equates with leverage, frankly.
As you look at Hollywood today and the Me Too movement and some of the social changes that are happening, you're in a position of power in this industry for a really long time. Could you have done more in your time in power to make it a better place?
Well, it's really difficult to have these conversations today looking back 30, 40 years. When we started the business in 74, these issues weren't brought to the surface like they are today. They weren't as apparent. We also didn't allow a lot of the things to occur that for some reason have happened in recent times. We didn't send clients into meetings unescorted. We had 40% of our staff were women. We would hear things sometimes, but not very often. I think what's happening right now is good for the business. It's been a problem that's been an undercurrent in the business from day one. This is not a new issue. It's just finally come to the surface. I think a lot of brave women have come forward. But we didn't see a lot of the behavior as blatantly in those days as you see it today. It never came to the surface.
You still dabble, right? You do venture capital now?
I work up since 2001. I've been working up in San Francisco between San Jose and San Francisco. It's been the most extraordinary experience. It's very similar to the heyday of CA up there. It's brilliant young people, flush with capital, men and women, young men and women that want to change the world. And coming up there as the gray hair, having had some success and some failures, it's really interesting to work with them. They're particularly interested in the mistakes. They want to dissect them, analyze them, make sure they don't do it themselves. But every day I learn something different, and I kind of feel like I discovered up there what Ponce de Leon was looking for.
Do you miss the business down here?
I tell you what I miss. I miss the people that I worked with. They were really gifted and it was fun. I don't miss the stress and I don't miss the 300 phone calls a day and I don't miss knowing where I'm going to be 3 months in advance every minute of my day. And I don't miss the pressure of knowing that whatever I did, I was going to offend somebody. I don't miss that at all. But do I miss one thing? If I do miss one thing, it's the people that I worked with. They were amazing.
Yeah, that thing about, you know, 300 phone calls a day or whatever it was. By the time I got to the end of this book, I was tired. I was tired for you, I think, you know?
I got tired right around my 50th birthday. I got tired.
Michael Ovitz. The book is called Who Is Michael Ovitz? Michael, thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
So there you go. That was my conversation with Michael Ovitz, the co-founder of Creative Artist Agency. If you liked what you heard, maybe you'll leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend, please. Don't know. Anyway, thanks for listening. The Corner Office is produced by Bridget Bonner. This episode by Maria Hollenhorst. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you next week with another episode.